Hi.
Hi.
My name is Tammy. And I have a question. Yesterday I thought it might be about reactivity or something like that. I feel that my years of practice have given me a lot of quiet and being quite content with my life. But recently, I feel that whatever has to do with my inner life is fine. But then I open up the internet or listen to the radio and I feel like living here in Israel is like living at the end of the mouth of a huge monster which is about to eat us at any moment. And the amount of violence and cruelty that is around is very scary to me, and I feel many people around me are getting very cynical. And it's either we try to push it away and just go on with our small, nice life, or just surviving in a way.
Or there is a third option.
Or, yeah, we'll have to check this third one. Or getting involved in some ways, but also sometimes this leads to a lot of, or to meet a lot of desperation and being exhausted after a while from meeting so much harsh feelings and acts that are being done.
So the Dharma teaches us to seek liberation from suffering for all. And here in Israel, of course, there's very easily division.
Many divisions.
Many, absolutely. And so it's going to take rather a lot of deep reflection and thinking to find very skillful ways of meeting the suffering and finding somehow a release from conflict. So if we say, oh, my world is fine because I can meditate and feel peace. Yet, of course, then when we go out, when we meet our friends, when we turn on the TV, when we read the newspaper, we see all kinds of horrific and horrendous things. That those things are occurring. Then it is necessary to actually open to that suffering. The conflict causes suffering for all. The first noble truth is to comprehend the suffering. And there's extraordinary suffering that's caused by various actions that are divisive here. And look, it's not just here in Israel. In Australia, we have, of course, dreadful treatment of our Aboriginal people. We also have really horrific treatment of those who come by boat to seek asylum. In fact, what our government does breaks international law at the moment.
Yeah, it's the same as here.
Yeah. And so whatever I say today isn't coming from any place of righteousness, because we have the same difficulties. And so as Dharma practitioners, the issue becomes, how can we bring some wisdom to the situation? How can we understand the causes of suffering? How can we see into the causes and conditions that bring about violence and aggression and do something to bring some change? So this is what faces us.
That's your turn.
So what are your reflections? It seems to me you can no longer live in your own little world.
I don't think I ever really lived in my own little world.
Good. Good. Because we are all human beings, and the actions we need to take need to be born of our humanity and care and love, no matter what our nationality, no matter what our cultural heritage or background. Over to you. In what way could you make a contribution to peace?
First of all, by not closing my eyes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
For instance, I think maybe 2 months ago, I joined some people who went on a bus and went just to see. There is a jail, which the government doesn't call it a jail, but it is, in the middle of the desert. And there, asylum seekers are put. And of course, with no trial, because they are not guilty of anything.
Of course. We
and, So there are people who go there on a regular basis, and they know some of the people, and they are really doing something on a. I joined it one time, and I felt it just because I really need to see it with my own eyes.
Yes.
And
what was your response?
I think there were many, many responses going on, and though on one level you just say, this can't be happening. I can't believe this is happening. On the other, it's not the other, just another thing that's happening. Yes. This is happening. you see it. You meet the people, you speak to them. There is some very simple meeting, human meeting.
Yes.
Then I go home and they are left there.
Yes.
And
what do you think the impact is for somebody who is held in detention to be visited by somebody who cares?
I think it must be kind of a release.
Release. Yes.
Letting go of some of the tension, at least for a short while, even. Yes.
So it's very important and very precious. This action of being prepared to meet another person who's held in detention by your own government, but to meet out of humanity, to meet with care and love, is a precious gesture that will not go unnoticed. It has extraordinary power to bring shift and change.
Shift and change?
Yes, a shift and change. A shift and change in attitudes for you and for the other.
Mm.
So these things that we do, when we don't shut our eyes, when we are prepared to open our eyes and look and see, we see the suffering of another, we see our own suffering. There's extraordinary conflict and hurt that's brought about, that occurs for everybody involved in a conflict, both sides. And Dharma practice is to begin by talking about this, as you are now. Begin by acting, doing something to show your humanity to another. So how else can you contribute to peace? And by the way, there are people in Australia who have had Australian Dharma practitioners write them letters while they've been held in detention. Because we detain asylum seekers too. And they have said that those letters were so precious because they kept alive the hope that somebody cared. Somebody cared about their situation. And that through their darkest periods, the fact that one person cared and wrote a letter seemed to help get them through a really painful and difficult time. So don't underestimate a gesture of goodwill and the effect it can have. So how else can you express your desire for peace, your goodwill, contribute towards the end of suffering for all?
Well, I am looking right now for a place to volunteer.
Yes.
And I do have a meeting about it tomorrow.
Wonderful.
But and I don't underestimate it.
Good.
But still, I feel sometimes, just as I described in the beginning, when I'm overwhelmed.
Yes.
By the cruelty, yes, that is being turned to each and every one of us, actually, by those who sit in the governments and so on. And with the fear, I think, well, maybe it's a few kinds of fear. It's the fear maybe for myself or for my family or for my close ones, and the fear that is much bigger than that, from from the evil, from the this huge thing that is not, well, it's like, I'm not sure how to say that.
In the face of cruelty and violence, what does our reaction need to be?
I guess it should be compassion.
If possible. But at least wisdom and steadiness. Yes?
Yeah.
And acting in ways that don't contribute to further harm and further violence. So we have to understand and be prepared to be a voice for peace, to be a voice for reconciliation, to be a voice that speaks out against injustice, in order to live according to our humanity. That which makes us a human being is our capacity to have love and compassion. Is it not?
Yeah.
So if we're going to live true to this, true to what we deeply know as Dharma practitioners, with the intention of ending suffering, we need to find some ways, and we need to be a little fearless sometimes about speaking out. We need to stand up against, I mean, in Australia, we've recently had a huge protest against environmental destruction. And thousands of people camped out, and they chained themselves to big concrete blocks that were stopping bulldozers from knocking down trees and miners from drilling big holes and destroying the environment. So sometimes it actually takes rather radical action. So sometimes we need to say, okay, these are my deeply held principles. This is the wisdom of the Dharma. This is what I understand. So let's explore how we can contribute in our actions, through our actions, in a small or big way, to peace.
And also,
yes,
I think maybe that's the more complicated part.
Yes.
We need to be ready to meet this, to meet also violence inside us.
Yes. Yes, you said it. Okay. And what are the roots of violence inside us? What keeps violence inside us alive?
Fear.
Yes. Yes. Fear is one thing. What else?
Holding on to concepts or some kind of blindness, I think.
Blindness?
Blindness.
Yes.
Yeah.
So holding on to concepts of identity or desires or wishes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think identity is very, well, as I feel it in Israel, identity is like number one. And yeah, but also on a personal level, ideas of what should be and who are other people.
Yes. And so to bridge the gap, to cross the divide, we must learn to look rather fearlessly and ruthlessly at the violence inside. Understand what contributes to it and how to end it. So,
it sounds simple.
Yeah. So, you're going to be a voice for peace. What's the group you're joining?
There is in Tel Aviv a library that was made up by just regular people, not by any ministry or something. And it is in a park, just in the area of the central station of Tel Aviv, mm-hmm. where many foreigners and asylum mm-hmm. seekers live. Mm-hmm. And this library serves all those people. Mm-hmm. There are books in many, many languages mm-hmm. that are usually can't be found in Israel, and a lot of activities for children.
Yes.
And so that's it.
Beautiful. So that's a wonderful way to meet others with care and love and kindness as an expression of who you are as a human being.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, anybody? Hello.
Without a microphone,
it's okay. No, they won't be able to hear you.
I'll speak loud. My question is, how do I find time to practice with little kids at home? They always seem to wake up before me.
Yes.
And if I put an alarm clock, they will wake up with me. So, I just don't find any time to practice.
Okay. As the mother of four children, I have some experience in this. What do you call practice?
Of course, raising the children itself is a practice.
Hello, aren't you doing this all the time?
Yes.
So you're practicing all the time? Yes?
In that sense.
In that sense?
Not in the sense of sitting in a pillow. No.
No. Moments where we get to sit on a pillow and close our eyes are rare when we have a number of small children. How many do you have?
Two.
Okay, so how can practice be kept alive, interesting, full, and how can it be beneficial when the form is not this? Is the question, isn't it? So when you look at your children, what's your experience?
I actually came here because I thought I need to be more concentrated when they speak, because too easily I get distracted and I don't listen to them because they speak so much.
Of course.
It would be helpful if I would respond to them, like, and actually listen to what they say. A bit of concentration in the mind.
Okay. If I can just digress here a little bit. I was with my granddaughter, who is not even two, in a shop with her father. She was in a pusher, and she was talking. And along came a woman who noticed how much this little 1.5-year-old, not yet two, was talking. And she said to me, "Oh, she talks a lot." And the little one said, "Yes, too much." So even at two, where did she get the concept from? None of us have ever said you talk too much. Yet she could make a joke about herself. So children are incredibly astute. So, that, yes, they do talk a lot. And we get tired of listening sometimes, and we don't hear what's being said until the asking becomes a demand. Okay, so, listening more could be a practice. What else?
Maybe if I could teach them to calm down somehow, sometimes.
How old are they?
2 and 6.5. So I'm speaking about the 6.5. 2 and 6.5.
2 and 6.5. Okay. You're speaking about the 6.5-year-old. Okay. We had an inquiry about a 6-year-old yesterday. Okay. How might you do this? You said you wanted to teach the 6.5-year-old to be more calm.
I don't know how to.
Okay. Are you calm yourself with the children?
I take a small break from them.
So you take a break because?
When I feel I'm starting to be too nervous,
yes,
then I just go take a break for 10 minutes or so.
Okay. So when you find yourself getting distressed and reactive, irritated, annoyed, you take a break. All right.
But, like, their problem is... his problem, he's not the kind that starts to shout or anything.
Yes.
He just becomes very nervous. You could see he's nervous, you know, he's biting his nails and nervous inside. It's not like he's bothering anybody.
Yes.
So how can I calm him down?
What do you do to really be with him? When you really spend time with your son, what do you do?
What do I do, or what does he want me to do?
No, what do you do with him? Do you play? Do you walk? Do you take him out?
We do all that. What he likes is just when I sit and pat his back.
Can't hear you.
Just sitting and patting his back. That's what he likes.
Okay. So he likes the contact, the touch, the reassurance from you. That's easy.
He would also like me to play with him, but I just can't. It's too boring.
Okay. So, he wants you to play and you're going, "Oh, no, so boring." Is it really boring when you play?
maybe if I would be more concentrated in the game, then it would be less boring.
Perhaps if you could let go of the idea that playing is boring. Because do you not remember that just playing can be fabulous fun with a child?
It really makes me anxious when he wants to come and play. Like, I get all stressed. Oh my god, what am I supposed to do with these animals now? Now he wants to play for the whole hour with the animals. I don't know what to do. And then I tell him, fine, you do what you want. I just sit there. And you make up all the rules and you make up the game. But then I'm bored.
Okay. So a little more creativity could be required. So rather than saying, I can't stand this, this is boring, I don't want to play with a six-year-old, I can't stand playing with animals or whatever, instead of doing that, see if you can be creative. This can be your practice. How can I let go of the notion and my resistance to doing something as wonderful as playing and just do it? Can you go to the beach? Can you roll in the sand? Can you build a sandcastle? Can you...
No, I'm not such a bad mother.
Okay. Okay, you do all that. Okay.
But the clash is that, you know, I'm willing to do all those things outside.
Or yeah, yeah, okay.
Have a, you know, card game or something. But yeah, just these imaginative games, they drive me out of my mind. I don't know what to do with them. And this is what he wants. And as long as he doesn't get it, so there's this tension.
Okay. So, it seems to me your practice is one of patience.
Okay.
So the qualities of love, of generosity, of patience are precious. And, you know, they're part of the perfections, and we need to step out of our comfort zone sometimes and say, okay, I will play even though I don't feel like it. Or just to very patiently guide him into different ways of doing things or into being comfortable by himself. You said he was anxious. So it seems to me that the asking you to play with him could be part of his anxiety, the wanting of your attention. So finding other ways to express your love so that he feels secure and loved is really important. And so instead of having an anxious response yourself, a reactive response, find that place of calm with and contentedness within yourself and react from there. Let this be your practice. So it's tender, it's patient, it's giving. But look, I'm not expecting you to be saintly. We're not, most of us aren't saintly parents. Heavens, I wasn't. But we do reach that point where we need to be rather selfless about what we do and giving and very patient. So, back to the practice. Practice is not just what happens on the cushion. Practice has many forms. And being with our children is really a great test for most of us, of our patience, our love, our kindness, our generosity, our selflessness. Because being a mother or a father is a selfless role. We have to give up. We have to renounce doing what we particularly want to do at that moment. It is a practice of almost constant, in my opinion, constant renunciation. And the beautiful thing is that when we do just give in to it, when we do just surrender to the role fully and play, for example, it feels delightful. It feels wonderful. It's a joy. Okay. Final question. When you really look into the eyes of your child, What do you feel? Louder?
I feel I love him.
Yes. Say a little more about the love.
Well, it doesn't happen a lot. He doesn't do a lot of eye contact.
Okay. When you have your arm, your hand on his back, what do you feel?
I'm worried for him.
Ah, you're worried for him. Okay. Okay. So it might be that you need to explore some different ways of being with him. Because if you are worried for him, what he's sensing and knowing and learning is worry. And you said he's already chewing his nails and being worried himself. I'm not saying that's your fault or you're causing it. Give me your hand, my dear.
Thank you. Okay.
You're okay? Yeah. The tears are tears of love and care. And if you really spend precious, beautiful time with him, the anxiety will fall away by itself. Your anxiety and his. And this capacity we have of being with our children is an extraordinary thing. So don't see it as less than formal practice. I think it's far harder. I really do. Thank you. Just reflecting on the first inquiry. The teachers of Tovana have thought very carefully and put together a statement called Bridging the Divide, or something like that it's called. And it is a statement about what Dharma practitioners can do in the face of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And it is rather carefully and beautifully worded. And I would suggest that you all please read it. Because I read it the day before yesterday and I found it to be really thoroughly and totally inspirational. So please check that for yourself. I'm sure it's available on the website. And in the statement, what's discussed is our capacity as Dharma practitioners to care for all, to have the courage to speak out, to turn towards our suffering, the suffering of all, all without exception, and to explore and discover together the causes of our pain, the roots of our violence, and to understand the ignorance that brings about the kind of cruelty that was spoken about. So as human beings, this is one of the areas that is painful and difficult to address, but it needs our attention. So in small ways, each of us here can perhaps do something every day to contribute to some kind of peace, to contribute to the alleviation of suffering, whether it's through contact with an asylum seeker, or whether it's helping one of your neighbors, whatever it is. There are many forms. And my view is not a political view. I'm not coming here and saying what you ought to do politically, but rather simply a humanitarian view. One of seeing the humanity that we all share and finding a way on this earth to really be together. I think this is so important. Some of us struggle just being with ourselves, let alone with somebody else. And to come to the second of the inquiries, our capacity to be with our children lovingly, playfully, kindly, with wisdom, is an enormous challenge. And it's difficult practice. And like everything else, we need to find a way through the difficulties and rest in the wisdom that we can see and know quite profoundly when we rest in the heart that is love itself. Thank you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to the two who inquired.